Welcome to the Nordic Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, owner of the company Horns of Odin. As always, before we jump into the show, I do have to plug our Patreon. It is how we keep the lights on. It's how we keep everything going. Like I say, starts over there from £3 a month, which works out about 10p a day. You get a bonus episode every single week and then an extra bonus episode on top of that a month, which is our story time with Jonas Lorentzen. And on the tier up from that, there's an extra two bonus episodes every month. So really, it's just completely stacked. Go and check it out. I don't need to rant on about it every week. Just pop over to Patreon.com/Nordic Mythology Podcast. Have a look. There will definitely be something for you. And you get the whole back catalogue on there as well. So everything we've recorded up until today, you can listen to everything before that. So there is months and months and months of content that you can check out. We're also working on doing some merch at the minute. We finally pulled our fingers out and that's going to be coming soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And if you can leave us a 5-star rating, positive review wherever you get your podcasts, that would be wonderful. It helps new people find the show. Obviously the YouTube, we're trying to grow that. Just like, subscribe, hit the little bell button, all those typical YouTube tropes. But yeah, let's get into today's shows. I'm very, very much looking forward to this one. So I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Margaret Havgar. I'm going to try and do it properly. So, Margaret.
Yeah, hi guys. Also, I was thinking, since I'm like going to be recurring from now on, you could introduce me with like my full name, but then we could also just switch to Mags just to make it easier for everyone involved.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm never really a huge fan of like shorthanded names, unless you said
you prefer... So you want me to call you Daniel from now on?
No, I don't mind it when people call me short versions. Like, that doesn't bother me. But for me, when I call other people things, unless they specifically say I'd rather this, I don't know why. I've never really been one for nicknames, I guess.
No, that makes sense. I'm just saying, yeah.
But if you prefer Mags, we'll go with Mags.
Fair enough, Mags. Okay. Takes less time, doesn't it?
Yeah, those milliseconds really do add up.
Don't they, though?
I mean, they do, yes. Do you want to explain today's episode?
Sure. We're gonna be talking about Ósatrú and Norse paganism and kind of how that connects to the Viking Age. That's pretty much it. And it's like, as far as I've thought about it, it's just going to kind of be a conversation, isn't it, Dan, between you and I, about how does this all fit, or like, how is it connected?
Mm-hmm.
Which is which? What is the facial expression you have going on right now? What is this?
do you want to explain how we came about this topic?
Yeah, we can. I can. Sure. So a few weeks back, we had a team meeting for the podcast, and in what was in my mind supposed to be just kind of a footnote for a thing, I don't even remember what, maybe a topic or something, we got into the topic of Norse paganism and Ósatrú, and I kind of went on a little bit of a rant, which I didn't even realize was a rant before I was like ending said rant, so much so that I even sent you a message afterwards, Dan, going, I am so sorry for going off on that tangent. I didn't mean to, but here we are. And then Dan pitched it as the topic for today's episode. So yeah. As you guys can probably infer, this is something of which I have opinions.
Opinions are good.
Yeah. But that being said, like, I also just want to be very clear about this, that I'm coming from, like, to this topic, I'm coming from a very academic standpoint, and I'm also someone who isn't practicing in any of these current kind of environments or communities. So I also would just want to make sure that I'm not here to deem whether or not someone's belief system is correct or incorrect. I'm just really interested in kind of how this and the terminology being used is connected to the work that I do. And also a side note, when you pitch this as an episode topic, I went straight to the books, and I have done so much like internet research the past few days because it suddenly hit me, that rant I had notwithstanding. I was like, well, if we're going to talk about this on a podcast, I want to make sure that the things that I have opinions about, that the opinions are based on something and not just presumptions that I may have. And I gotta admit that some of those presumptions turned out to be exactly that, presumptions. And I'm very happy that I got the opportunity to just hyper-focus in on this and just kind of take myself to task a little bit.
Oh, that's good. Hopefully later on I can ask you what maybe some of those were, some of the things that you thought and then you found out weren't maybe what you were
reading. Oh,
originally.
Definitely.
That would be fun to cover. But yeah, so you're going to keep it pretty objective. We're not here to, like you said, bash religion.
Absolutely not.
But more to just try and straighten things out as to what is historically accurate and what is a modern reconstruction, and just maybe fix some of the terminology that's maybe used wrong and some people who maybe think some things are one thing that they're not.
And maybe if not like correct them, maybe just kind of detangle a little bit, because
okay,
I think a lot of terms are used kind of fluctuatingly and we think it means this, but maybe in fact it refers to something else. I don't know.
You're
so
just here to upset a bunch of people. It's all right.
Here we go. Well, this
is
going to be great for you guys watching this on YouTube later, because I am certain that if Dan keeps this going, I'm going to spend the entire episode in varying shades of blush.
No. You're not going to upset anybody. Everybody knows that you're coming from a very...
But you know what? If I do upset anyone, that's, of course, totally fine. And I thought about this a lot right before we started recording, that I also would just want to make sure that for the past few days when I've done research, I've done my best to try to understand the nuance in the different terms being used. And I'm going to try to adhere to them and use them correctly in the way that they're now being used. But that being said, for the audience and for everyone watching now live too, please take me to task. Like if I misrepresent, or if we misrepresent, or use something. If you're gonna throw me under the bus, Dan, I'm gonna throw you right back under there. Like you're not getting out of this one.
We're a we. The podcast is a we.
Exactly. A we. So like, if something is misunderstood or misused or misrepresented, please take us to task about it. And also, I guess Patreon plug. I mean, let us know in the Discord.
Yeah, the Discord, the little Discord community we have is amazing. So that is another feature you get from the Patreon. But yeah, see, Margaret, you forget, or you weren't here for like the Matthias days, where Matthias didn't care about really upset people. He cared about the truth and what was accurate. And if it, not that he was intentionally ever meaning to offend anyone, but it was like, this is the truth. And if you don't like it, kind of tough. And the podcast, we probably upset a lot of people over the years in certain areas, but we always felt that if we were upsetting everybody from all sides, then we were probably doing something right, because it means we were in the middle and we were kind of representing little bits of everything. We weren't going in one direction or the other, so we just aimed to piss everyone off. this is throwing it back. Within a 2-week spell, we got called racist and Nazis and liberal Jewish cooks. In the space
oh,
of
always great with like some anti-Semitism in there, just for good measure.
This is in the space of like 7 days. We got called like both absolute extreme ends of the scale, and we looked at it and we're like, how can we both be both? So we took it as not a compliment, but we were like, oh well, we must be kind of doing something right if these two extreme ends are pissed at us.
Sure, absolutely.
Basically, don't worry about upsetting anyone.
Yeah. Well, I think, okay, so the thing, sure, yes. Like, I'm not gonna say that I'm not nervous about upsetting people because I am. That would be the truth to say that. But I think it's more that I just want to make sure that we don't misrepresent something that is easily available us like easily available out there for us to know. Like like a stupid example could be like someone using like a horned helmet and thinking this is accurately representing the Viking Age, and people out there are like, everyone knows now, right, that Vikings didn't wear horns on their helmets. Like, it's does that allegory make sense? Like, did that make sense? I just want to make sure that like it's also like things are open for interpretation. I guess that's maybe I've listened to a few episodes with you and Matthias, and I think it's a lot of fun, but I think that's an area where Matthias and I differ, where I think I am very in line with him about wanting to make sure that things are represented correctly and some things are just incorrect. But I think I am more interested in like the nuances of things, where I can get very upset about certain things or get very like about other things, but I'm not really that this might come out wishy-washy, but I don't think that there's any such thing as one ultimate hard truth, especially when we're dealing with the past, because the picture of what we know of what the world was like and life was like back then is constantly shifting and in motion. And there are so many things that we still don't know, and there are so many things that several versions could be true, and we don't know exactly which one is true, or maybe all of them are. That's not to say that there aren't things that definitely aren't correct, but it's just that, like, I don't think. Now I'm like getting tangled in my own thoughts already. But I think that's perhaps one of the reasons why this makes me a bit, on face value, nervous or uncomfortable to talk about it. It's just because since there are so many unknown factors, I don't really even know how to address the fact that current belief systems are being inspired by a mythology from this period, because I'm like, but there are so many things we don't know. So how, what?
No, I get it. And that's why we're gonna have a conversation about it. And that's all this is at the end of the day.
Sure, exactly.
I think I said to you, I don't think I said this on air last week. I think I said it off or in one of the bonus episodes, how we had a comment on one of the YouTube videos about how the way we talk to, like, we don't ask so many questions about the guests, or we talk about ourselves, or and have conversations.
Yeah, they were critiquing your interview style,
Yeah,
weren't they?
that was it. And my reply was, well, that's because we don't do interviews. These have never been interviews. They're just long form conversations where we can hang out about loosely around a topic. So yeah, we're just gonna talk, and our opinions and thoughts might change throughout the conversation, which they
And that's
sometimes
fun,
do.
right? Isn't that cool?
Because as you air things, and I think anybody out there who's ever said things to themselves, I don't know how many people talk to themselves, but I do,
Oh, I
especially
talk to myself all the time.
if I have something to figure out and my head's a little bit, jumbled up, and I need to figure out what I'm going to do next. Usually I'll kind of just say them out loud, and it just feels like it's clearing, and I can work it out a little better. So that happens sometimes with these conversations, when you have these thoughts, and as you say them aloud, you can, like, oh, maybe that doesn't sound the same in my head as it does out loud, and you kind of change them as you go along. And I think that's important for all walks of life, to let people change their opinions sometimes.
No, exactly, 100%.
But we've caveated for long enough. We've disclaimed now for 10 minutes and covered us ourselves.
So we're like we're on track then.
Let's stop sitting on the fence.
And, okay, cool. Let's go.
Now let's get into this. Where do you think we should start? Do you think we should start with maybe in general what Ousa True is? Or is that too big of a question to start? Have you thought about that?
I have. And that's actually one of the areas where my thoughts around the topic have changed a little bit in the past couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that I wasn't aware of, and the annoying thing here, is that it was something I was not aware of. But then at the same time, I couldn't find a hard source for this either. But it, so just be aware of that, guys. I can't like point you to where this information clearly is from. But it makes a lot of sense to me, and I'll clarify why, is that the term Osotru, and I saw that in the chat, some people were like, how the fuck do you spell that? So Osotru, the way I pronounce it, is with the Scandinavian O, the A with the circle on top, Osotru with a U.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that's a term that started popping up in the 19th century, so the 1800s, as a way to kind of put a term to the pre-Christian belief system of Scandinavia, then kind of preliminarily, like specifically the Viking Age belief system. And the reason it makes sense to me, even though I couldn't find an appropriate go-to source for where this information came from about the term popping up in the 1800s, is because it makes sense to me that there was no term for pre-Christian cosmology or belief before mm-hmm. then. It makes sense to me that from all we know of the way people lived and practiced, that what we think of as religion today wouldn't necessarily be the right way to describe it
mm-hmm.
because it was just so interwoven in the way things were done. It was just a part of how you did things.
So jump in. Do you think that maybe, you know, during the 19th century, that possibly things were maybe as advanced as they are today in terms of like understanding different religions and respect of different religions, that maybe the, you know, the beliefs of pre-Christian Scandinavians was just kind of put down as mythology, just like maybe like Greek and Roman mythology, and not given a religious term because it was never really seen to be a religion. Because I assume a lot more people were Christian than today. You know, like the vast majority of people would have been Christian or one of the other three big sort of Abrahamic faiths. So do you think that maybe they just looked at it and didn't even respect the idea of pagans or heathens? It was still a very negative term. So it was like, why, we don't need to even warrant giving this its own term because it's just these kind of people, pre-Christian, that we don't have to really, I guess, give respect to.
I have no idea. I mean, just broad strokes, definitely able to critique me on this on several fronts, but you know, generally speaking, and speaking very broadly here, the 1800s isn't famous for being super tolerant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also, I don't think, again, since I don't have the firsthand source for where this information came from about when this term popped up, I'll be totally honest with you, the place I saw this was on Wikipedia, and I tried to trace it, but I couldn't. I could mm-hmm. not find the source where this information was from.
Yeah.
So again, I might be wrong about this, but if I'm to speculate, I would rather think that scholarship about pre-Christian times was increasing and they wanted a word to specify what they were talking about. And the term Osotru, which I don't need a source for because it's very clear, like in the different Scandinavian languages and Norwegian particularly. I'm saying Norwegian particularly because that's a Scandinavian language that I speak fluently.
Mm-hmm.
is that the word split into two parts, åsa, tru, means acid belief. So the belief in the acid, meaning the one type of God that you have in that pantheon. So it makes a lot of sense that it's just like, okay, so this is like, you could call it like Jesus belief instead of Christianity. It's like, it's just a word to specify what you're talking about.
Nothing like Norwegians being literal with their worms.
About everything.
Oh my God. Sorry to interrupt, I've been doing Duolingo a little bit, and the favorite one is bus stop.
Because that's where the bus stops.
Bus holder plaza, the bus holding place. It's like, I mean, it's not wrong. It's right. It's just such a literal thing. I love it. I do love it.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. But yeah, so it's very kind of literal though, isn't it? But so as far as I can tell, that's where that specific word comes from, and then that's been adopted into modern use, as far as I can tell. And I guess this probably comes as a surprise to no one if you've dabbled in these types of topics even a little bit, is that I guess the reason why I have been a bit had a bit of trepidation going into this is because I was wondering how far I had to get before it all got super politically murky. Right? And especially here in Scandinavia, I think it accounts for a lot of other places too. Like I've read a bunch about how it's been misused, especially in other places in the West, like the UK and the US especially. But I think here in Scandinavia, now I'm speaking from personal experience, it feels very personal when stuff like this is misused because it's like someone is perverting the past that we all share. And it's difficult to know how to engage or disengage with that. And that's why I've been kind of approaching this with a bit of nervousness, because I think it's important to recognize that this stuff has been misused, but then also showing respect to the areas where it's not being misused and used very respectfully and with curiosity. And faith, you know, without the mission of that being something that should be a tool to put other people down in order to put yourself above them. And I mean, this is me talking very subtext about white supremacy. You know?
And I think it's fair to take note that even my whole life is in this area, and obviously the Vikings had a huge impact on Britain, particularly England, Scotland. And I think that when this stuff's misused, obviously I get upset, and there's a lot of, like, I guess all of Americans who are interested in this kind of stuff, when it gets misused, get upset. But I think we're also one step removed from people in Scandinavia, and we have to maybe sometimes remember that it's another level of disrespect, I feel, to the people of Scandinavia when this stuff is misrepresented, because it is like a direct part of their history, their lineage, whatever you want to call it. And it has that extra little cut, I guess, to everyone else, and it's probably worth just sometimes maybe taking a second to appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's not like it hurts me more than you necessarily, but it's like, for example, me being involved in Viking Age research, I always unconsciously, due to this misuse, am aware of at what point Do I need to make clear that this is this and not that? Like, there's always a thought in my head of like making sure that I don't add fuel to any fire that people use to misrepresent this past. And I mean, when I say misrepresent, that does imply that there is something that is correct and that's being used incorrectly, correct, right? But I would say that rather than there being this ultimate correctness, I would say that the misuse is rather cherry picking elements and then creating a false whole that is presented as an ultimate truth. Does that make sense? And I think that's where this gets me a bit nervous because I saw someone in the chat earlier saying something about faith is, I don't have the comment in front of me right now, so I'm sorry if I missed kind of quoting what was being said, but I think the gist of it was like the whole point of faith is that you don't necessarily need to know the whole picture in order for it to make sense or for it to be kind of an actual thing. And I definitely agree with that. I think what is difficult for me as a researcher is when there are so many holes that we don't know kind of definite answers to, or questions that we're not exactly sure how to answer, when someone does come along to misuse it and then cherry pick all of these details and creates a picture of a past that probably has never existed, but elements of it are true. But then how do you engage with that? And I would also just like, this is not supposed to be an episode about white supremacy specifically, but I think that unfortunately, the term also too, especially has been misused so much that it's kind of impossible to have a conversation about this without acknowledging it. And I think that's where my academic standpoint comes in too, that it's like, I want to make sure that we're all kind of clear about what we're talking about, and I might not be right in everything that I think or say, but I also think it's interesting to make sure that we can at least have like a nuanced conversation about it without it being used as a tool of power. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. You don't have to worry.
No, it's like I'm forming all these thoughts while I speak,
know,
right?
I
So
know that.
this is exactly like the rant that I had in this team meeting where I'm like, is my brain just getting ahead of me? Like, am I just
No,
talking now? At some point, I just got lost.
I can see that, this is, you're choosing your words very carefully. You're forming as you go, and I love that. I love the fact that you're willing to be very vulnerable with it and put your thoughts out there. I have a huge amount of respect for that. So, also true as a the you said the term comes from the 1800s,
Supposedly, again, I
supposedly.
haven't been able to find that primary source that that information comes from, but if that is the case, that makes sense to me academically.
Okay, so that I assume then that would mean that this is a modern religion that is reconstructing the pre-Christian beliefs in the idea of anyway. I guess that's the idea behind it, is that they're reconstructing the pre-Christian beliefs in a new way for people to believe today, so they can feel closer to that, I guess, or that's what they, I guess, what they, the beliefs that they have. It's, I'm trying to think of, yeah, how to put it, because obviously we don't have any sort of dogma for like pre-Christian Scandinavia, or what the Vikings actually believed. This
Exactly.
is what they believe. Obviously, everything comes later. Everything has some form of Christian influence to it. So we don't have that, you know, that Bible. So
No.
I assume in some ways he's also true trying to like create that, as in like take bits that we know and put them into a mod, like bring them, not put them necessarily into a modern context, but take them from what we know and bring them forward into some sort of structure that people can then follow from a religious standpoint. Did that make sense? I know I went around
Yep.
the houses because, again,
No,
I'm trying
yeah.
to work
But
this
that
out
made sense
myself.
to me. So I think in order to answer your question, there are a couple of things we need to go through that from that I kind of came across in the research that I try to do on this to educate myself on the specific topic is that I think, well, what it seems like to me is that if we're talking about things that are being practiced today, especially in Scandinavia, modern also through can be used as a blanket term. And that the different groups themselves, especially the one that I've read about here in Norway, does use the word also through themselves. As soon as you start to involve communities, especially in North America, the term osotru or asotru becomes a lot more murky. As far as I could tell, and big shout out to Kim from the Discord server for just providing me with some sources that made one big hell of a difference. Because when I was trying to understand all the nuances here, I had a pretty relatively easy time understanding the nuances from a Scandinavian perspective. But as soon as I got into the more kind of English terminology, and especially the like what the environment is in North America, I was just like, I don't even know where to start here. So again, shout out to Kim for giving me some good sources on that. As far as I could tell, there have been some unfortunate incidences in North America where a few groups using the Asatru term has perpetuated very clearly white supremacist ideals. And for that reason, as far as I could tell, the terms Norse paganism or heathenry are now preferred.
Okay.
Also because those movements focus a bit more on a scholarly approach, again, I could be wrong here, but as far as I could understand from how they describe themselves, it's more like we are open to what scholarship has shown us and what we do know from these sources. And not necessarily relying on assumptions or presumptions of what we think life was like in the Viking Age or pre-Christian Scandinavia, meaning longer span than the Viking Age. I also find it, and this is encompassing the whole of kind of, if you want to use the term, then kind of Norse paganism as an umbrella term, it's hard in any of the cases, regardless of geographical area, to kind of pin down exactly what it is for the sole reason of there not being a tight structure or kind of religious hierarchy or dogma to adhere to, which I find really, really cool. Meaning that you can't really go ahead and be like, everyone who thinks this is like this or believes this exact point and believes this exact thing which I think is cool. It makes it a lot more difficult to understand and kind of wrap your head around, because then I think it's more about interacting and communicating with specific people who practice in specific groups and being like, hey, so what's your approach to this? Like, what does this mean to you? If that is something that people are willing to talk about, because I also have a lot of respect for people just being like, you know what, my beliefs are my beliefs and that's for me. And I don't really feel like talking about it. That's okay. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's your thing.
Yeah. I think that it's wonderful that people can apply this in any way they want to their lives, I guess, because there isn't that strict structure. We don't know what people really believed, and I, my personal belief would be that there wouldn't be a single structured religion across all of Scandinavia in the Viking Age. I think it would vary geographically on where you were, to which gods you may prefer. I think it would be very different. We're living in a time where things are a lot more fractured. There isn't like a single state system, so everybody is probably going to have their own variations. I don't think there is one particular quote unquote like Norse pagan belief in the Viking Age. I think it would be very different based on where you were. But I think in a modern sense, it's wonderful because people can apply it to their lives how they want, and they can, the gods that they feel closest to, they can, you know, have an attachment to them and believe in that and pray and offer to them. But the problem comes then when this is then used for nefarious reasons. As you said earlier, it's very easy to cherry pick parts, weave them into your narrative, and then it kind of legitimizes it, even though it doesn't. But to some people who don't know and don't understand, it gives this legitimacy to it because they can point to these certain areas of this being woven in and go, oh, well, this part's real, this part's real, this part's real. So for all the amazing things, because it is so open, it allows people to have such freedom and play with it and really adapt it into their lives. And I think it's one of the reasons why it's so popular today, because people have that freedom to really weave it into their lives. It's not strict structured like the big three religions. It's not kind of like you have to follow this set of rules. It's like you can kind of relatively do what you want, but just have this in your life. But it also leaves it open for misinterpretation, unfortunately. But
sure, exactly.
It's kind of part of it, and you can't kind of have one without the other, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's also important to note that, like, even within the big three here, like, meaning, in case someone who listens to this hasn't come across that term before, meaning Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, or Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Even within all of those, you have so many different schools of thought, right?
Yeah.
So many different, but they're not necessarily that easy to know from the surface or from the get-go.
There still seems to be a main backbone, I guess, that runs
sure,
through.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I think what's really interesting with the, again, as a non-practicing person who's never really interacted with any practicing modern pagan communities, what I thought was really interesting was that it was really difficult for me to pin down exactly where this stems from, but there is this overarching, from what I could tell, belief in set values or schools of thought that are inspired by, and I really like this kind of this was echoed in all of the modern communities that I looked through their info, that it said very clearly that it was drawn on or inspired by sources from pre-Christian beliefs, meaning that I'm sure there are probably community is trying to do this as well, but the point isn't to resurrect or necessarily revive something as it was before, but to draw inspiration from and faith from the evidence that we do have. And I saw that in the chat that we currently have going, that maybe a way to kind of try to start understanding it is a belief in the Nordic pantheon, and then it varies from there. But even that, especially that was especially here from the Scandinavian point of view, it's like you don't even have to believe that the Nordic pantheon is a real thing for you to be a practitioner, but more a conviction in the values and the ways of life that's inspired by. So I want to be very like clear here that I'm not trying to like, oh, this is the way the academic thinks that everything works, but like from the surface, from the outside looking in, that's what I could understand of it. Which I thought was just really, really interesting. And what I also thought was really interesting was that the main heathenry site that I read a lot about, again, shout out to Kim for giving me that source, and the Scandinavian, also through Bifrost communities, all of these, especially the Scandinavian ones, have also been recognized as legitimate religious paths from the state, meaning that they're kind of recognized as a real religion that is happening and currently ongoing, is that they took a very anti-racist stance, which I thought was, it's probably also been necessary from the communities based on what we've discussed earlier. But I also found it really heartening that they're not shying away from it. Instead, they're actually like facing it head on. And being like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah. No. I think that for the most part, they probably have to, because you need to separate yourself away from that and make or put a zero tolerance on it. And I think it's the same with, I don't want to compare them to Facebook groups, but I'm gonna.
There we go.
Whenever you enter most Facebook groups, one of the first questions is, no racism. And I think, and I imagine for the most part, you know, most other Facebook groups you enter that aren't in this area, the one of the main questions isn't going to be no racism. It's kind of just a given. But the fact that it's there, it shows that there is, unfortunately, this problem, and it has to be addressed face on, to just kind of say straight away, this is a zero tolerance thing. We're not having it. So I think it's kind of like you get ahead of it and just put your foot down.
I mean, this is the world we live in, right? And unfortunate as it may be, I find it more comforting that instead of trying to just pretend like it isn't there and trying to nip it in the bud if it does happen, I find it comforting that people are like, yeah, this is reality and it sucks. And if you want to be a part of it, then you need to not be an asshat.
Yeah.
And treat people with respect.
Absolutely.
Period.
Absolutely. So I just want to try and kind of wrap this up in, not wrap the episode up, but wrap this little portion up in my own head. So it seems that as a true, as a term, it doesn't have like, there isn't like a single belief system behind it. It's a term that can be used for like a bunch of sort of reconstructed modern religions looking back at like pre-Christian Scandinavian, what they believe, but there isn't like a single religion. Does that, am I making sense? It seems
exactly the same.
This,
and it was a really good input from the chat that I relate to was someone mentioned that I've always kind of understood it more as instead of a faith, of it being more a way of life.
And okay, this might be problematic, but
Oh, okay. All right. I'm gonna put my
no.
crocheting down and listen real,
No.
real good.
It's not that problematic. I'm going to compare it to the Satanic Temple.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I'm going to throw it out
Here we
there.
go.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to compare it to some levels of, I guess, of quote unquote Satanism.
But
Because,
even that is difficult as hell, though, right?
yeah, I'm not like saying that they're one for one, but this idea that it, like, anybody who's looked into, say, the Satanic Temple, they don't believe in Satan. That's just not a thing that they do.
Exactly.
They believe in an anti-establishment and at least like an anti-Christian or any religion. They believe that no religion should be forced into public spaces, particularly in America, into like public state, like state land shouldn't be influenced heavily by a single religion. Which is why you see a lot of the protesting they do with trying to get the Baphomet statue into places. It's kind of to shock the system by saying, if you're going to force a Christian statue here, then we have the same right to have a Baphomet statue here. It's not necessarily because they believe in Satan, it's they believe that religion shouldn't be influencing state matters. So I guess what I'm. My comparison is that it's not also true, or at least like for Norse pagan, for the most part, it doesn't seem to be a belief in some sort of higher power and godly figures, which I'm sure some people do, and obviously, and that's absolutely their personal right, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that it's not a belief in, and yeah, not a belief in like a higher power, and we believe that Odin is actually up there, or Thor is actually up there. It's a case of we band together with a group of people who follow the same, and I hate that I'm going to say this, but I can't think of a better word, like the same virtues and the same way to live a life. And we all see like this whole Viking Nine virtues thing, which I really don't like, which is why I didn't want to use the word, but I can't think of a better one. But yeah,
But yeah.
we want to band together with a group of people who all think like us, they all have the same core moral beliefs and values, and that is kind of our religion. It because I think for most people, and certainly for me, I think the term religion has always been one. Growing up in you know, the UK is a Christian country. Growing up going to Sunday school, for me, the term religion was always that belief in a higher power. I never had like an understanding or comprehension of religion ever being able to mean anything other than that, like religion and belief, like yeah, I guess to say any religion to me was the belief in some sort of omnipotent creature or being that ruled or made the world. That was kind of like the rudimentary thought that I had, and that's what I'd been brought up with. So that's what religion was to me. There wasn't this kind of idea you could have a religion that didn't believe in some sort of all powerful, which I love that I can learn new things and that there are those out there, because that kind of fits with me more, I guess, than my actual beliefs.
Yeah, and I think that like it's I think it is really cool that people are inspired by the little traces that we do have left, you know,
Yeah.
of a mainly non-literacy based society, you know? I think that's a really cool thing. And the one thing that I did see echoed was if there even was one tenet, and again, I might be wrong here, but this is what I could tell, was the belief that it is the life that you're living now that is important, not what happens after you die.
Yeah.
And kind of, it sounds so like, it sounds like such a platitude when I say it like this, but essentially, like, making not kind of putting stock into what happens after you die, but making sure that what you're living right now is is the shit.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah, like humanism. Like it's said in the chat.
So, okay, I'm gonna tell you what I think this, I guess, surmises to, and then you can tell me if it's wrong. So
Oh.
I feel like then it's a group of people who are interested, predominantly interested in Nordic mythology, the Viking Age, and they look at maybe how life was then compared to now. Obviously, a lot much more of a more simple life, much more in touch with nature. Maybe people would consider, certainly in the way that it's romanticized, a fairer world for maybe for female rights, I guess, because that is an idea that is there. It is romanticized. That they look at, they have this idea of the Vikings being, men and women being equal, but being much closer to the earth, very more natural based, and one with nature. It's a group of people who have all these kind of ideas of almost fairness and very much equality, I think, have this like real equality mindset, and but all based around kind of like the Viking Age and their interest in Nordic mythology. So then it kind of just got this umbrella term because there wasn't a term for it. But for the most part, it's just a group of people who have all these very similar thoughts and beliefs, maybe on how life should be or how they'd like life to be, and beliefs and their own moral values, who all kind of came together around this central point of being interested in Vikings because they're really cool. Does
Yeah,
that make sense?
it makes sense. And I think, I mean, I can't tell you whether that's correct or not because I'm not a part of those communities, so I can't be the judge saying whether or not that's correct if that's the way that it is. What I do think is interesting, and again, I'm not saying this as a judgment of practicing communities. However, I do think a thing that you brought up is very interesting, in romanticizing what you picture life was like back then, because that is something that makes me a bit hesitant. Because the thing is, I very much agree with the values of treating people fairly and correctly, but if you're using what we do know of the Viking Age s society, not mythology necessarily. You have instances there as well, 100%. But if you do use what we do know of Viking Age society as a baseline there, that's not what you're going to get. Viking Age society was not a utopia. I am of the opinion that we have a very hard time in our current understanding of what gender and biological sex is, and our very strict binary understanding of it to correctly understand what was meant by those terms in the Viking Age. That being said, I don't think that it was a genderless utopia with fairness and equal rights for all. I would not want to live in the Viking Age. It would vary from what we do know, it would severely depend on what societal strata or status you belong to, how good or cool your life would be, and what roles you could take and not. I
I mean,
don't think
that's similar to today,
100%, but I mean,
nepotism.
like, yeah, sure, absolutely. But I think there are a lot of cool values to be gleaned from Norse mythology, 100%. But I think that there is a danger of romanticizing the way of life back then.
Yeah, and it really is. I think I don't know where it comes from, whether it comes from TV shows, or because I don't know. Yeah, again, maybe because it is quite cool, like obviously this figure of like a shield maiden is very popular, and it's very it's very of the times now, and it gets put out into the world. But and for the most part, people do unfortunately get their information from TV shows. And this is one of the reasons why I have such an issue with when Netflix make a historical drama and then they change the characters. Now, I'm not bothered. This could get me in a lot of trouble, I guess.
It all depends on what we're talking about, though, right? Yeah, it's very situational, specific to whatever we're talking about.
For me, I'm not bothered if you change a character if it's a fictional character. So, like, if you changed James Bond, and I'd love to see Idris Elba play James Bond. A lot of people don't like that. They get really upset about it.
But it's because of unfortunate undertones that we've already discussed, because of racism, point blank.
Yeah. But I do, unfortunately, I do have issue with when historical characters are changed, when it's then portrayed as a historical drama. And my issue comes with it because, unfortunately, a lot of people get their history from TV shows now, and they don't do any further research. So they'll watch a TV show, and that will be their primary source of history. And that is how they're learning, getting their education on this matter is from that. And they'll watch this, what will be advertised as a historical drama. So they will think, oh, this is historically accurate. And that will be all, that will just sit as historical fact. And that's where I think companies or TV shows have a little bit more of a responsibility to try and be accurate. And it might not be the most inclusive thing for the times, but I think you have a duty to be historically accurate. And maybe you don't agree with it, but that would be that's my thought.
Yeah, but and then you also get into the problem when you're trying to be or you want something to be historically accurate about a time period where there are certain things you can definitely be historically accurate about, but there are other areas, like we're talking about, I'm thinking about the Viking Age specifically now, mm-hmm. where there are so many areas of which you could be the devil's advocate and say, we can't really know whether or not this is historically accurate or not.
Yeah, I was more meaning about the more recent ones that Netflix had done. I think Jennifer said The Crown. I think it might have been The Crown.
But I haven't. Yeah, there are so many of those I haven't watched. But like, as a tangent,
I don't want to get myself in too much trouble. But I think the one that I saw that kind of rubbed me up the wrong way a little bit was they made like a historical drama about Anne Boleyn, but they made Anne Boleyn a black lady, which I feel like when you change things like that, unfortunately, there is a group of probably like younger people who will watch this and take that as to be the historical fact, and they don't know the accurate side to it. And so I think that you have a responsibility to just make these things as they were historically. This is something we actually know. So just make it as it is. So it's situations like that where I think companies do have a responsibility to try and be accurate, because unfortunately we're in a time where people get a lot of their information from media companies, and they take it as being fact. There are a lot of people that unfortunately watch Vikings and think that's exactly how it was.
Yeah, and the thing is, the funny thing about that Netflix adaptation with Anne Boleyn, I can't really comment on because I haven't seen it. I don't really know if I need to have an opinion about it, because it is not about me. When they historical figures are portrayed in a different ethnicity than what they are supposed to have had, I don't have that much of an issue with it if it's done consciously, just because of the amount of times historical figures, like several people from the Bible, are continuously whitewashed. But I think it's kind of healthy for us to be confronted with what if Anne Boleyn was black. But my tangent was, and this might be, I know we're straying from the topic at hand, but since we are on the historical accuracy front, a series that I saw recently, which is all the rage in Norway right now, and I really does hope that Netflix buys the rights to it and puts English subtitles on it, because I thought it was a really, really, really interesting take on how to make a historically accurate, but also in historically adjacent drama. Is a Norwegian series that came out this fall and now just a few weeks ago it just finished, called Makta, or The Power, so like the authority, which is, long story short, kind of a very contemporary history of the Norwegian Labour Party in the 70s and 80s, and then the eventual rise of Norway's first female prime minister, Gro Harlem Brundtland. But that episode's, like, in the title sequence, when you see the title of the show, it says Makta. And I'm going to say it in Norwegian first, then I'm going to translate it. It says Makta, basert på sannhet, løgn og dårlig hukommelse, which means the authority based on truth, lies, and badly recalled memories. So the entire point of the show is to communicate a vibe and a notion of what was happening. And there are certain things that they have done very consciously inaccurate.
Okay.
And there are so many characters that don't have the authentic dialect or skin color that they would have had in real life. But that isn't the point. The point is to communicate kind of the underlying tension and vibes and the themes of what was happening. And also the characters continually, or not continually, because that would get very tiresome, but they sometimes cut off and the actors in character address the camera or the director. And I know this isn't the first time that's been done, but they've been inspired by a lot of indie movies and shows, and actually, like, address the director and be like, we can't do the scene like this because this is a historical figure, and the way that you're portraying this figure makes them seem like they're just a fop. This is very unfair to this person. And you can just hear the director going, yeah, well, that's the way the manuscripts are. Can you just, like, can you guys just read out your lines, please? And they're like, but this makes us look dumb. Like, it's not that show, I think that show is great, but it's not that show is the be all end all. But I think that show kind of, it very directly confronts and interacts with that notion that we're talking about right now, with historical accuracy, with representation, with how should we, because like you said, this is the way that a lot of people get their information from, and not a lot of people do the research afterwards. But if more shows were done in the manner which Makta is done, I wonder if more people would look things up, because they've tried to portray things in a way that you're kind of sitting there like, is that how it actually happened? So you end up Googling while you're watching it. And I listened to a few interviews after the fact with the series creators and directors, and they were like, that's legitimately what our hope was, that people would be Googling while they're watching.
To clarify, I like, my issue is when they call it like an historical drama or historical documentary. Like, that is where I take umbrage, I guess, is when it's labeled as that. But also I hate it the other way around. It's not a kind of one-way thing. When they had, was it Christian Bale and Joel Edgerton playing the kings of Egypt or whatever? I think that is as
Spare
ridiculous.
Me.
Yeah, so you know, I think it
like,
it
you
goes,
didn't even try, guys. Come on. There are so many talented Egyptian actors out there. Like, please.
it goes in all directions. I think that when it comes to, when something is put out as an historical thing, then try to be I think you have a duty in this day and age to be as accurate as possible, because so many people do get their information from that and do take it to be historical fact. And I think even if they call it historical fiction, I think most people still, unfortunately, take it to be historical fact. So I think there is a responsibility to try and be somewhat accurate.
Yeah, and I think, and even though we've gone on like way of a tangent at the moment, but at the same time, I do think that this does circle back to Ósatrú in Norse mythology, right? Because when that is represented in pop culture, that is the way that some people will get their understanding of what Norse mythology or what modern Norse paganism is. Like, I have a lot of issue with, I watch a lot of, like, not necessarily true crime, but, like, you know, like the million crime shows from like the early 2000s and onwards. Like, when it comes like an episode where minority groups are represented, and especially when it's like communities that are kind of maybe not the mainstream for most people watching, if suddenly I watch a show like that and something about modern Norse paganism or Ósatrú comes on, I'm immediately a bit like, oh, where are they going with this? Yeah. Like, how are they? You know?
Yeah. It's a complex topic. It's complicated because,
and again, even in the source material, you see that. Like, even just going through stuff that I already knew that I wanted to brush up on for this episode, just like reading through like the Elder Eddas, or the older Eddas, so meaning not Snorri's, which are kind of the number one basis for our understanding of Norse mythology. Even all of those are gathered from a bunch of different manuscripts, and the way that those vary, those poems, the mythological poems vary, indicate that these myths have been recomposed and changed and altered. So there is no one end-all be-all Norse mythology either, right? It's been something that's been in constant motion.
It's already starting on rocky grounds.
Not just rocky ground, but like you don't have I hate this term, but like, you don't have, for lack of a better term, a scripture, right? But you have a bunch of different fragments that gives you a glimpse into, oh, these were myths that existed. We don't know exactly how old they are, and they're likely pre-Christian, even though they're written down in a Christian society. So we should have a critical eye when we look at them. Mm-hmm. But the way that they're like, the way that this myth is different in this manuscript from when it's like written down in this other manuscript shows how, I mean, I find that it's, sure, you can definitely think of it as, oh no, it's so complicated and strange and difficult to understand. But at the same time, I think it's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it shows how nothing is static.
It is. It really is. Okay, so we're going to have to wrap this up because Jonas has just popped into the chat.
100%.
I'm going to let him turn his camera on when we finish this, because I feel like he'll get us into all sorts of troubles if I let him join this conversation right now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So to wrap up, I think the ending point should be that it's not, because there will be some people who think Ósatrú is an actual representation of what people believed in the Viking Age, and it's just been pulled from there. So I think that's probably what we should clarify, or maybe you want to like do like a Mags's final thoughts in a Jerry Springer-esque thing of like, just kind of like maybe try and tie it up in a little above like the key points of like that it's not, it is a modern reconstruction of something, and there,
yeah, I wouldn't even call it a reconstruction. From my understanding, modern Norse paganism and or Åsatrud, depending on your geographical location and the terminology that is correct for the area that you're in. My understanding of it is that that is an umbrella term used for a variety of, let's call it ways of life that draws inspiration from Norse mythology and the values therein, and how they're used in practice and how that looks in life greatly depends on the person practicing, from my understanding.
Wonderful. There we go. Let's wrap this up. And we will do a quick Q&A. We'll let Jonas join us for that, and then we'll do the story time. So if you do want to listen to a little bit more of this chat or any of the chats we do a bonus Q&A after every one. It's just an extension of the main show. There's a lot of questions that get asked in there that I've missed in the main show, so there's a ton of extra information. So if any of the shows that you do enjoy, you want that little bit extra, pop over to our Patreon. It's £3 a month, 10p a day. It's like buying me a cup of coffee or mags. And yeah, you get those extra little bits, and there's a bunch of bonus material on there. There's so much at this point. But yeah, I think that's about it. I think if you can, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. But Margaret, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is Archeomags. That's Archeo with a K and M-A-G-S.
Wonderful. And then, as always, it's just Daniel and Scott Firing 1 at Horns of Odin or the Nordic Mythology Podcast on all the different platforms, and as well as YouTube. And don't forget to hit the little subscribe button. But let's jump over and let people in the chat ask some questions, and then we'll do story time.